days were getting shorter and cooler. Winter was on its way. It was time to build up the wood pile to supply the fireplace through the biting cold that was soon to descend upon the happy little valley. The man of the house was busily cutting wood when he spied from the corner of his eye a small pair of shoes. He looked up and there was a young boy watching his every move. "My daddy can chop wood faster than that." "Is that so?" replied the man, rather amused at the lad's boldness. "He sure can. My daddy can do anything. He is the best there is." "Well, you are privileged to have such a daddy." Such was the simplicity of my childhood. These were the days when Mummy and Daddy could do no wrong and were the most awesome people imaginable. In some way, it would have been nice to remain in that simple state, but it was not to be. After a short time in school, I began to adjust to the constant round of comparisons, seeking to find my place in the little community of children I shared my educational experience with. The level of comparison was not so intense during primary school days, and so much of my early school experience I recall with fond memories. Lots of crafts and games and activities. In the main, it was a lot of fun, but there were times when the future was brought forward, and I would experience the bittersweet taste of the Duracell kingdom. When I was 7, my family moved to a new place, and I was soon feeling my way into a new group of children. I made friends quickly, but also encountered some nasty fellows. I was a fairly solid build as a child, and a couple of the skinny kids decided they would get some mileage out of the fact that I was slightly better padded than they were. Fatso, Fat Albert, and Slob are some of the names I remember. It was a horrid experience, which many of us have encountered in childhood. This happened day after day. The enemy of souls was using these boys to destroy my sense of worth. On the way to school one morning, I decided I'd had enough. "Mum, I'm not getting out of the car. I'm not going to school." "Of course you are, my boy." "No, I'm not." As we drove in, I saw that menacing pair watching like vultures to attack their prey. Mum opened the car door and tried to dislodge me. The next few minutes were quite intense. I kicked and screamed and yelled and clung to my chair. Just a typically bad behaved boy, maybe. But when your sense of identity as a person is being flattened, you are going to take some desperate measures to save yourself. I don't actually remember what happened next, but I remember that the bullying stopped. Here was a real taste of what lay ahead. The cruelty manifested in children is the raw, unbridled result of the principles of Satan's comparative kingdom in action. We can often stand dazed by the brazen selfishness and ingratitude that children exhibit. Do we grow out of these traits? No. As we have learned, no one leaves this kingdom without the assistance of the Son of David. As we grow older, we simply become more cunning and refined. By the time I had reached the middle of high school, I was well programmed. I was learning to worship the God of education, the God of sport, and the God of physical appearance. I wanted to worship the God of money, but I didn't have a job. Everything around me was telling me that I had to strive to be first, strive to achieve. I learned that only winners are accepted and losers are worth nothing. Many times my incentive to do well at school was motivated more by the possibility of achieving first place than simply enjoying the content of what I was learning. I would watch films on television that would reinforce this belief. Leading male actors were portrayed as having to achieve some great feat that would melt the heart of some young lady. This taught me that a relationship was something that you achieved, that the young lady was more like a prize than a friend. Not that you would state it that way. This all happened at the subconscious level. This was the time for dreaming. I often would lie in my bed and dream about hitting the winning runs for Australia in a cricket match, or scoring the final goal, or risking life and limb to save some young damsel in distress. These dreams formed the fabric of my value system. The more I dreamed, the more determined I became to achieve those goals. The hard part is that you can't achieve these goals in a vacuum. You have to beat other people. I wanted my friends, but I wanted my dreams first. I could be civil when my dreams were not threatened, but when I sensed that my dreams were being challenged, it was war. I worked hard at achieving my goals. I excelled in sport and in my education. Well, 2 out of 3 is not bad. Then I began to enter another phase. Once you have reached the top, you have to try and stay there. There is a constant looking over your shoulder and guarding your precious position. Then there is the expectation of reputation. Once you have carved out a reputation, what if you did badly? That would be horrible. So you become even more determined. This battle raged on for a while until I began to realize that reaching all my goals would be nearly impossible. This led to bursts of rage. I think I must have felt betrayed. I had served my masters well, and now they were mocking me. I was training in a system that could never give me a lasting sense of worth, and so I was angry. Many people struggle to discern the volatility and destructiveness often displayed by young people. Why many of them commit suicide or resort to binge drinking and drugs. I believe it is often because they realize that they will never achieve their dreams through the methods that they have been taught. They will never be great in the eyes of others, and so they self-destruct. I remember one day playing in a basketball game. The game was close, and the pressure was on. The guy I was marking suddenly made a drive for the hoop, and as he lifted the ball, I reached in and flicked the ball cleanly out of his hand. To my disbelief, I heard the referee's whistle and I heard the words, "Foul!" I knew I hadn't touched him, and all of a sudden this rage just welled up inside me. Anger for this wretched system which promised me the world gave me nothing. I stormed over to the referee and stood 2 inches from his face and just turned the volume up to an obscene decibel level. Something snapped inside me, and I was not holding back. I was promptly kicked off the court and banned from the competition. As I walked off, I believe God spoke to me. I asked myself, "What is wrong with you, man? You really lost it out there. You are losing control." It was the first time I really had a look at myself and questioned the direction I was heading. God could see that I was starting to search for something better, that I felt there had to be a better way. The enemy of my soul also realized this and tried to drive me deeper into trying to prove myself, like a smoker who senses that his time to quit has nearly come and begins to smoke twice as many cigarettes. I began to withdraw as my dreams faded and I became very moody. One day my mother came into my room and began to complain about the state of my room. Let's just say it was less than optimal, as most teenage boys' rooms are. Suddenly I became incensed that she had come into my space and was ordering me around. I let fly a series of choice words under my breath and told her to leave me alone. It is interesting the different ways that God can get to you. Many of my friends refer to their mother as the old bag, or other equally delightful terms. Somehow my father managed to teach me some sense of respect for my parents, and I vowed I would never speak about my mother the way some of my friends did. When I uttered those words about my mother, it was like the last piece of dignity I had was stripped away. I was shocked that I would say such things, and my depression deepened. I was getting to the point of not caring anymore, and that is a very dangerous place to be. I had this real sense that I had come to a crossroads. The broad path beckoned me with its yawning jaws full of its wine, women, and song. On the other side was the narrow path as laid out by the Bible. Would I follow the religion my parents had taught me, or would I go like a blazing comet into the broad path? I could see no point in pretending to be a Christian anymore. It was now plain to me that I was not a Christian, and never had been, even though I was brought up in a Christian environment. It was either Christ or the devil. Thankfully, I chose to try and find the real Jesus of the Bible. I decided I would read a book that had been in our home for many years. It was called Steps to Christ. Now that title seemed perfect for my needs. I began to read with a hunger and desperation to find him. I had to find the stairway to heaven because I could not handle the kingdom of Satan anymore. Early in the book, the author explained that Jesus came to dispel the lies that the human race had embraced about God, how he came to show God really loved us. I drank in the words like a parched earth under the summer rains. The author invited me to think about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and follow him to the cross. As I was imagining these scenes, suddenly I felt like I was actually standing and watching him. The figure on the cross seemed very real, and I received this strong impression that he was hanging there because he loved me and understood my desperate need to escape the kingdom of Satan. I received the thought that I could trust him as my best friend and that he would guide me to the heavenly kingdom. As I beheld him there, I felt this immense sense of gratitude that he was willing to save me, and I felt the weight of guilt, anxiety, depression and fear that I had carried for years just roll off my back. A peace entered my heart that I had never felt before, and then I cried and cried for joy. The Son of David had broken through my darkness and pierced it with the light of day.